Well, a new project at the Chicago Design Museum is asking a pretty simple yet important question. What's worth preserving? Now, you would expect that question from the Chicago Design Museum because preservation is usually a word that's thrown around when we talk about landmark architecture, historic buildings, design. But this project, created by founder and executive director Tanner Woodford, goes well beyond the built space. Tanner sent handwritten letters to friends and colleagues with a simple question. And what he got back was much more broad. What's worth preserving? Some say fountain pens. Some say plums. Some say true love. It's a great project that wants to be a book that features these handwritten responses from people like Jane Goodall and writer Elizabeth Crane and many, many others. Tanner Woodford's in studio tonight with me to talk about the project and to read some of the responses. Tanner, good to see you.
Good to see you, too.
Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me. I'm thrilled
to
be here.
So where does this come from? What a great concept to almost make it esoteric. What's worth preserving? Where does this idea come from?
Deep inside, first off. It is a really wonderful question, and it's one that took me a long time to get there, to be honest. And for me, preservation is really sort of at the core of the human experience. It's incredibly important to sort of look back at the things that you want to save, look back at the things you want to communicate to your kids and your grandkids, and to be able to sort of to be able to answer this question says something about what you think about the future as well. So it's just broad enough that you can really look at it from multiple perspectives, or you can be a realist about it. And we've gotten a broad range of answers.
And we've heard, I mean, preservation is always played out in the public space when it comes to architecture or buildings, even here on Michigan Ave, the landmark, what's going to be torn down. But when you think about preservation, you know, in 2017, it means a lot of different things to a lot of different people, especially when you start talking about the digital world.
Absolutely.
What do we save on our computers? What do we save on our social media? What's worth preserving? You're right. Like, what do we take with us? And what do those things mean to us? It's a whole different ballgame when you talk about preservation in this day and age.
Absolutely. And preservation, when you think about a building or something, is much different. It's much easier to sort of wrap your head around why that might be important or how you might accomplish that. But you also have to think about preservation, as you're saying, digitally. And what are we choosing to save? What are we saving on hard drives? What are we uploading to the cloud? And also, what aren't we choosing to save? What's being saved for us that we don't realize? And who's the audience for that? How are we looking through that? It's suddenly we're creating so much data, it's become very complicated to think about preservation.
And it also is person to person, because some people will be a pack rat, and I have bins in my garage three high from the days of doing sketch comedy in Chicago that I open up one and it's just, you know, a poster here and an article here and a picture here, and I'm like, all of this stays. And I actually had a conversation with my 10-year-old son, and we had the conversation about preservation. I'm like, all of this stays because when I see it and I go through it, it elicits a feeling. It takes me back 20 years to a certain spot in a certain time that makes me feel something, makes me feel warm or whatever it might be. And sort of having that lesson about why these old papers mean anything. But that's changing.
Sure.
Because he's 10 years old. Most of his stuff's not even on. There is no poster. There is no crumpled up newspaper. That everything is online.
So for you, is preservation about nostalgia?
Mm-hmm. I think it is. I think it's about sort of trying to go back somewhere.
Finding home.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So is that our time? Are we up? Thank
yeah,
you. I'll
done.
Be back
yeah.
next Tuesday.
That's great.
No. All right. So let's talk about, so you start this project, Tanner, by saying, all right, I'm going to send a letter. I'm going to start the project. So you started with a handwritten letter to, like I said, friends, colleagues, and cultural icons to say, I want you to be involved. What is the letter that you sent?
Well, I can read you one. I brought one with me.
All right, good.
So it's very simple. I've written about 500 letters as part of this campaign. And I've gotten back about 50 responses, and I've written them sort of very broadly. I sort of pick an archetype of person, a movie director, for example, or a prisoner, and I'll write to 20 prisoners. And then I'll move on to the next archetype and start working through that. The letter usually says something to the effect of, hello, I'm working on a project that collects and publishes handwritten letters from prominent cultural figures. I would love to include yours and your handwriting. Could you please answer this? What's worth preserving? And that's it.
That's it.
It's very simple.
And do they know the letter's coming? Or, I mean, it's just in the mail and they're like,
It's in the mail and I get an incredible amount of returned envelopes. And also some very thoughtful rejection letters.
Do they really? Yeah. Handwritten?
Handwritten.
They're like, no, I don't want to. I'm not going to answer this for a number of reasons.
Right.
And I go and give you four pages. Okay, so who are you saying? I mean, how many people have you seen? You said over 500 letters now. Uh-huh. And talk about the responses you've got. You've got a couple of examples here. Maybe we can read some of the letters that have come back. But what overall are you getting? What did you expect to get, and what are you getting back?
I expected to get a lot of handwritten letters, and I've been surprised to get a lot of things that aren't handwritten letters. For example, Matthew Hoffman, who just put a mural on the Apple Store recently.
Right. You are beautiful, right?
You are beautiful. He sent me a one-year supply of strawberry preserves, which I thought was wonderful. I'm still eating them. It hasn't been quite a year. I've also heard back from Cody Hudson. I got an original artwork today from him, actually, on the way to the studio. He is a principal at Land and Sea and Scribblink.
Yeah.
Art Paul, who designed the Playboy Bunny, wrote a letter. Seth Godin, who's a bestselling author of 22 books, handwrote a letter on a novelty-sized Post-it, a giant Post-it note, which is really lovely. As you mentioned, Elizabeth Crane, Jane Goodall, the UN Messenger of Peace. And
so they're being creative in their responses.
Absolutely.
It's not just like, here's my letter. They're really kind of buying into the question and expanding it even beyond the word.
And some responses have been a single word, and some have been 2,000 words. And that's been really exciting to see as well how they...
All right, Tanner, let's hear. What do you got? Give us an example. Let's read one of these.
I think we're going to start with the longest. I've got three I can read tonight if we have time.
Okay.
The first is Jerome Herman, and it's the longest I have. So let's jump in.
Okay.
Jerome is a powerful dancer using his cerebral palsy to lift up his choreography. As a professional dancer at Heidi Latsky Dance, Jerome is defying every expectation, creating performances that inspire others to keep moving. So
okay,
there's his
that's, bio. That, he didn't...
No, sorry, I should probably get some context instead of just jumping in there.
That was good context. I thought, like, that's how he starts letters, right. And you're like, oh, his bio, that's cool. Yeah. All right, good.
Yeah, so I wrote that part.
Okay,
yeah.
You wrote that part. All right, here's a letter.
Okay, here's a letter. Dear Tanner, I've been thinking about this question nonstop ever since you posed it. What's worth preserving? As the water filled my tub... What's worth preserving? As I got a breather after a major combination in rehearsal, what's worth preserving? It isn't so much the question is unanswerable or leading, it's the opposite. Open. Individual. My answer will produce some form of alternative universe, or secure the current one. It'll be fulfilled or denied. My answer is my hope, curated by anecdotes of its presence. I know it's there. Remember when. I'll go personal. Last night I was in attendance at an event that woke up many ghosts. Dreams I had had that were broken and dormant. I was in a space that pushed out an exhale from me, a soothing exhale of breath I did not realize I was holding. I truly understood what weightless might mean. That is not the only example, but one truly potent example of the need for imagination. My answer. Imagination is worth preserving.
Hmm.
The spaces, people, impulses that enable it to grow and furnish apartments, marry with other imaginations, have babies, and see them graduate magna cum laude. To see twilight on their porches as their rocking chairs swing partly due to the wind, and the vessel in the chair, to at one point sleep forever and leave behind heirs. Imagination is impartial, not a respecter of persons, which is why I like him. By the way, mine's a he. Yours can be a he, a she, or a they. He is audacious, which is often the necessary stance. He was with me when I was diagnosed with hemophilia cerebral palsy, a condition doctors said would and should limit my ability to fully live. Today I'm a professional dancer and writer. I'd settle with the kind of mundane but powerful crown of faculty of reason previously thought to be out of reach. Compounded crowns, I'm a sucker for alliteration between diagnosis and dance, or some late-night talk, some pubescent provocations of the status of things. Definitely some myopia. I don't think imagination, at least in the beginning, can collaborate. It's too precious. It's like a germ. It changes once on the outside. It can't multiply. It can't strengthen without its host. So the first partnership between host and germ details the success of that germ. Will the host acquiesce to fever, illusion, hallucination, or take precaution? Because if the host does not, no other host will. The germ must compel. By imagination, I can mean many things, but I suppose imagination in and of itself is not the danger of extinction. Maybe a brand. To hearken back to my germ analogy, the strain unencumbered by too much influence is in danger. Should we preserve a pioneer strain? The strain most associated with childhood, when most things were more unknown? But it's the place where most feelings are felt. The law matrix, the raw matrix. And at this point, he hand drew a raw matrix in the letter. This is not so scientific, but compels me all the same. There's something inherent in the pioneer stream of imagination that remains throughout one's life. Whether they abandon it, formalize it, making it fit within normal modes of society, and capitalize or succumb to its original version, it remains in some form. Even if you don't imagine wrestling people to the ground in massive arenas at 8, I dare you to tell me you don't do that at 27. I think I'm colluding dreams with imagination a bit. This is a difficult question.
Well, let me stop there. Yeah. I mean, it's amazing that you got that kind of response.
That's a
long letter.
You wouldn't,
handwritten letter.
And you wouldn't believe how fun it is to go to the mailbox these days.
All right. What else have you got there? Because you have a couple shorter ones,
I got
too.
A short one.
We only got about 3 minutes left.
Jodi Picoult. This is a really short one. It's very lovely. So Jodi's an American author. She was awarded the New England Bookseller Award for Fiction in 2003.
She's great.
She's wonderful. She sold 14 million books. She said on 27th June 2017, "What would I preserve? Voices. It's that which I miss the most. My eldest son's scratchy voice as a baby. My daughter at 5 messing up all pronouns. My grandfather saying, 'Hey, girl,' when I called. We take pictures, but we don't forget the sound of a beloved lullaby or a holiday concert solo or even the smile and the sound of someone we've lost to death." X. Jodi.
Wow. It is true. I mean, that's a great one. That's amazing.
She's so lovely. It gives me goosebumps every time I read
it. Yeah, that's I mean, and that would be, that's a tremendous, I mean, that's what we all try to preserve, right? Voice,
that's, right.
That's good. What are you going to do with all this? I mean, you have a Kickstarter because you want to put this project together. You want to make a book out of these.
That's right.
Is that what you're going for with this project?
That is, yeah. So we've also published them every week to our members. So every week we have an exclusive letter we publish online. But really, when you see them in the book and you see the sort of the full portfolio of responses, it's much more meaningful.
You got one more, right? You got a short one?
I sure do. It's
Let's do 2 minutes.
This one's a little too long, I think. Let me jump in. Cut me off. I need to cut me off.
All right.
Is from Alyssa Tenney, who is the president of SAIC. Hers is really wonderful, too. Dear Tanner, as a college president, I know people pursue all kinds of things when they begin a course of study. Knowledge, skills, a degree, the promise of a better job with a higher salary. They pursue attention for their work and distinction in their field. They pursue a dream of a better self, who's a more urbane, sophisticated, aware, and connected citizen of the world. School is an aspirational place, and these are all worthwhile pursuits. But most students and educators find it is not the goal or the recognition or the transformed self per se that's the most important or lasting. It's the love of inquiry that is the key. No matter how materially better our lives become because of our study, the asking of the question and pursuing its answer, which is most often another question, is what animates a lifetime.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's so awesome.
Isn't that great?
What do you think is worth preserving?
I'm trying to figure it out, man. I have no idea.
What a great project, man. I am over the moon that you're doing this.
Thank you.
This is so cool. And I hope you figure that out, because when you figure out what you think is worth preserving, I'd love to have you back.
Yeah.
In studio tonight, Tanner Woodford. He's the founder and executive director at the Chicago Design Museum. He's got a new project. The name of the project is What's Worth Preserving.
Sure is.
And it's there's a Kickstarter out there as well. You can find that. And like I said, it's handwritten letters asking prominent people what's worth preserving and their responses, handwritten responses, which we just heard a couple of them tonight. Tanner, can't thank you enough for coming in and sharing some of that stuff, and we appreciate it. And please come back when you figure out the question.
Great. Thanks so much for having me.